Testing. Oh, I know what I was doing wrong. I wasn't turning it all the way over to the record.
Oh.
And there's a red light right here.
Mm-hmm.
I can make sure that's on, apparently. What do you got?
SCR-69.
Construction
of Rock and Visitor Center in the Iowa State Park. Thank you, gentlemen. Do you want to wait for Pat or you want
to? No, get some of this out of here. I don't want to listen half an hour.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion.
What's happening?
Move it all.
Move them all out. Now there's nobody's witness with individual recommendation. Do I have any questions, everyone?
No objection. Okay, no objection.
I'll get on to something important.
You pass, excuse me.
Well, you know, there was...
I'd like for the record an objection as to the way you run this committee. You reported last year, the co-chairman reported that the rake package would be out today, and I see it isn't, so...
Friday week. The state employees asked me to hold it next week.
We're adjourned.
Because they can't be here.
Hey, come here. I want to tell you. I do have a problem, I think.
Are you
one of these.
The same place as you're running for
election? Okay.
To be determined by Department of Public Works and Senate Bill 408. What would you prefer to testify on first, Commissioner?
I'm only here to testify on the Petersville road.
All right, why don't we start with that one, as much as I hate to. By that time, my others will be in here.
Well, as you can see, this is a...
Pat, would you like to join us too, Senator?
Yeah, I think it's...
If you grab a chair...
This is the highway here, the Anchorage Fairbanks Highway here. Here's the Petersville Road here. Here is the lodge that's proposed by the Park Service. This is the beginning of the road here. This initial 7.4 miles was built in 1974 at a cost of at about $1 million.
Yes, we have a good deal there.
Your ADT on this, and that's average daily traffic, is 80 cars a day. This stretch here is now programmed for preliminary engineering at 11.5 miles. It was authorized June 1976, scheduled for construction in 1982. The 76 ADT, or average daily traffic, is 30 automobiles. This balance here is 14 and a half miles. The ADT, of course, is 10.
Yes.
I understand that.
Where do we end up right here on the 30-mile ADT in 76? Whereabouts are we right there?
Right there?
Yeah.
Well, you're at...
Where's Martin? Are we way above Martin there?
We're right above Martin. Here's 20-mile creek here.
Oh, okay.
Center. And then here's Peters Creek exactly right
Okay.
Here. And this here includes the bridge across.
Okay.
That little...
The old bridge?
The old bridge.
Yeah. It's a good bridge. I know how they ever got it up there. It's good. It's structural.
Then we, I guess the planning is to pick it up from there. Now this is a Park Service thing. Now they tell us, this is what they tell us. The Division of Parks told us that they estimate daily usage of the lodge to be around 2,000 people per day from June 1 through September. And they figure an average of around 250,000 a year, which conceivably could hit. This blue line is a portion of the area that was added to Denali Park in 1975.
I know, we stole a couple good mines there too.
Yeah, they're turning us down here.
and goddamn Elijah too. Excuse me, nobody else around, just friends. All right, we're talking about this area to here for preliminary engineering. Is that correct? Is that what we're talking about, Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, if I could make a comment.
Yeah.
$85,000 is not pinned down just to the addition that's going to be necessary from the existing road to the proposed site, but is instead devoted to the entire length of the Petersville Road plus the addition. However, the Department of Highways sees fit to spend that money to do the necessary engineering work. I hate to tell them how to do their work. They've been doing a good job.
If you don't mind, since I know this area very well and I'm co-sponsor with the Senator, but it's essentially in a pre-file situation, so we didn't have time to go over it. We're really talking about necessary engineering studies from here to here in a way.
Yes.
There's no use adding on the roof before you build the foundation.
It's all got to be done together.
So what we need really is we need to know the state portion and maybe stage A and stage B, which is a hell of a lot more than $85,000. That's probably where we're at. On that question, I don't know if we have those figures or they're going to be available shortly. So I have one question first, Commissioner, and then I'll defer to the committee. In your opinion, would this be, if the legislature provides funding, is this a priority road on what you've seen now?
Well,
for a rural...
No, not the way it is. This here is the key to everything.
From here to here would put yourself up in a very interesting priority situation.
My recommendation would be, Senator, that we continue on in the method that we're doing.
I see.
Then when the parks...
Step two.
Right. And when parks makes there, which I understand there's going to be a bill in for, then carry it on in.
One further question then, and it's more to Senator Rohde. You're not objecting, as long as it shows progress, what the engineering studies from this bill go into so long as they head in this direction?
That's correct.
Very good.
May I also make this statement, is that you're talking about 12% or 85% money.
Yes, sir. I understand that we may have some favorable treatment on that because the Park Service has indicated to us that they wish to move their entire Mount McKinley operation to the point that's marked on the map. For that reason, it will have a high federal priority. We may be able to get 90% money or better.
Well, then that would change the ADT, too. You know, the more people you got driving a road, well, the easier it is to upgrade it and pay for it.
Mr. Chairman, in the packet that I provide the committee members, there's information with regard to the National Park Service's position. They have made the decision. They are moving to the south side of the park. That is independent of what the state does. That decision is made. It's a federal decision. We can benefit from that federal decision because they can move on to our property, and it would give us, for the first time in Alaska's history, far more control over the National Park Service and over the use of our parks than we've had. I think that's a very desirable situation. Also, it will help us pay for the road that goes in there to a considerable extent because the federal presence will be the first major presence, probably even ahead of any development center that we have. I think that the federal the Park Service will do the first work in there because it's already been decided it's their priority.
Questions around the table. Senator Huber, do you have any questions on the legislation as it stands?
Senator Rohde. As I understand it, then there won't be a development where McKinley National Park headquarters and stuff is now. It's that's going to move around to our park.
They intend to reduce their efforts there in terms of providing entrance into the park. They're not going to shut everything down and block the road, but they're going to switch their emphasis because they feel they're unable to take care of the people. And as you know, in Fairbanks, you have to make reservations months or even years ahead to get in the park. Hopefully with this, with the emphasis on the south side of the park where the people are coming from, Fairbanks will now be able to get into the north side of the park on a come as you will basis. They're not going to block the road off, but their emphasis is going to switch to the south side of the park because the people that are coming to the park are coming from the south side. It makes more sense to put them there. Also, in terms of distance into the mountain, it's much shorter. In terms of The ecology of the park is a much tougher area, and it'll take more foot traffic in that, which is one of the concerns on the more fragile north side.
But that I understand that part. But I wanted, now they are also, I believe, changing the name of McKinley to Denali Park in their latest. So we're talking that the main Park Service headquarters for what is presently National Park, Mount McKinley National Park, its main headquarters will be at this new south site.
They have made
which
that decision.
I agree with, by the way. But it is in what is actually Alaska's Denali State Park.
Yes. I don't believe they'll be closing their office down. I can't speak for the Park Service, but my understanding is they won't be closing their office down in the north, but they will be shifting their emphasis to the south where the people are.
I don't know that all that makes, that wasn't what my interest was in it. I've criticized the hell out of them in the past for their closing the road except to tour buses and stuff like that. And anything we can do to increase the addition to the park so it's getting in more ways and so forth, so that more people can go in by private transportation without, shall we say, damaging the experience. I apparently don't follow that as strong as they do, but I'm quite familiar with the park and I agree with it. I used to do a lot of their radio work in the park, but you know, I see some of their ideas, like you can't take the leaves off the radio antenna transmission line where the wet branches are shorting it out, because you can't cut the branches away from the 800 foot long transmission line that they put in because they didn't know how to build a station without destroying the ecology without it, and then you have to work on it that way. You know, some of the very impractical people that I had to deal with there fixing their radios. So anything that gives them less excuse to restrict entrance to the park is good. But I like the idea of them getting on their headquarters on our state park end, because maybe we can say, hey, don't be so tough, boys, if we think they're being too tough.
I think there's a lot of merit to the sharing arrangement with the National Park Service. I think it's a very wise thing to do.
Senator Willis, do you have any questions?
No questions.
Sage? Barney, do you have any questions?
No, Senator.
Are there any further statements by any member here? There's no objections. I think we've gotten the parameters of the support dependent upon the whole road being constructed or planned for construction, and we may have a different figure, and it may well come up to finance, but I would, without objection, I'm going to state this will go out with due pass.
You want a motion, Mr. Chairman?
I would like to have one.
I move to go out with a due pass recommendation.
Senator, I'll leave all this.
Yeah, that's, I need it for my consent file here, because I'm undoubtedly have something to do with carrying it on the floor.
NDT.
Thank you. We don't have a very heavy file on it right now, but it has something like that.
Well,
right?
We appreciate being able to hear it from you guys.
I'd like to see a guy that's building a few roads, goddamn Scoogle. I wish I could just give you a sack and say you go build them or
wish we were building more.
I'll entertain that motion.
I'd like to give you $100 million sack and say get your butt out there and build these roads that we need.
Mr. Chairman,
each year for match.
That's true, but the $100 million generally tries to come from my district for yours.
I blinked an eye a few years ago, and Woody stole quite a bit. I could have gotten if I'd have been wider awake. I really distressed you, old bastard.
Take it easy now.
We have 387 and 385, and although it covers a broader statement, really what I have in mind is something that occurred to me a number of times. It goes back to Walter Hickel's idea, at least he was credited with the idea of having emergency funds for emergency reconstruction, that we don't have to go to the legislature or go to some source unappropriated for special session. Huge state like this, one-fifth of the size of the United States, we're going to have emergencies all the time that are essentially those created by nature. So I thought we should put together an emergency road reconstruction program as, for instance, the problem with the Seward Highway this year. We're going to have a lot of those. And I really would
appreciate the testimony, all but positive, from the commissioner and his staff.
Well, I like that. We're very good. Mr. Umar, Director of Planning.
Mr. Chairman, I think just in terms of concept, the idea of creating an emergency fund for the state parallels the emergency relief funds that are available also from the federal government. There is an emergency relief fund, which is 100% federal funds. If and when the governor declares an emergency, the governor of the state does declare an emergency, the federal government does have funds available to the state to make repairs and damage as a result of natural disasters such as floods, hurricanes, tidal waves, earthquakes, catastrophic failures from any cause, and repair reconstruction of bridges. We have made use of these funds in the past, and we're contemplating, for example, in some of the construction program for this year and next year to expend some of these emergency relief funds as a result of some of the earthquake damage that was done. So that we do have in the state then something that parallels federal funds that are already available.
Except federal funds aren't available as quickly as you might need them. It looks like 2 or 3 years to get going, for instance, on a Seward Highway. That's, you know, that is a problem in some cases.
Yes. So in terms of the endorsement of the concept, we feel that emergency road reconstruction fund would give us that flexibility in being able to react in a more timely manner. In terms of the amount seems reasonable. $20 million is a limit. And this also, I see, has a corollary bill which appropriates $5 million from the general fund to go in as part of this emergency relief fund. I would assume that this occurrence would also include catastrophic failures from any cause. For example, there are some bridges in the state that could have failures due to an inherent weakness in the structure or by other than say induced forces could catastrophically fail. So I assume that this particular conditions here are satisfied as far as catastrophic failures are concerned. I would suggest that this particular legislation maybe might refer to or use some of the wording of the federal legislation.
On the inherent structural failure or catastrophic, that portion?
Yes.
Barney, could you prepare an amendment to the bill that would cover that particular section if you can converse with the planner here, how you might dovetail it in, and our attorney too, if he would. It's handier for you to come up front, you know, we always want you up front. If you have any questions, I hope you'll join in.
I have no other comments than Commissioner Scoogle made. Okay.
Well, I don't think they want me to touch part of this 387, if I read it correctly, Mr. Chairman, something to do with the responsibility of prospective contractors.
Excuse me?
The responsibility of prospective contractors.
Well, there is that additional statement there on satisfactory performance. That's your little capability of checking. It may well be something that it's apart from the real substantial portion emergency road reconstruction fund.
Senator, we have that now. Have had.
But did it prevent such things, Mr. Chairman? Did it prevent such things as OB sealant and the dead horse haulers and so forth? We still didn't get a good road out of that school. That's not, I'm not blaming you, but the things that happened when OBC lid went under on the Farmer's Loop Road and the dead horse haulers came in and picked up the dead horse contract. I don't know whether it's the things that Ovi did in the beginning, or whether it's the things that they did, or whether it was trying to bail the thing out.
We bailed out Dead Horse Haulers. I bought Dead Horse Haulers, you know, Lloyd and I. That was Tiffany. And I understand what you're saying.
And I mention it because they were the, and a lot of people in Fairbanks didn't know that they were named the Dead Horse Haulers because they came in and picked up Obi Seeler's Dead Horse Farmers Loop Road contract. And then later on, their equipment was parked up on the North Slope while they're waiting for more work, and somebody comes along and names the place Dead Horse.
We barred several contractors.
Are there any further questions, gentlemen?
That was interesting.
Oh, this is kind of a nitpicking thing.
Might also be interested, the Fairbanks City Directory came along and they did such a good job that then they found Dead Horse Haulers, they placed them under the category of dead animal removers.
Senator Willis, would you manage these bills? I would like to have them go out, record me as a pass out. I have another meeting that I couldn't help. This came down from Fairbanks, and I got to go right now. So if you could handle those for me, I'd appreciate it with Godfather and others. And
okay. Well, let's see. We're still on Senate Bill 387. On page 2, and this is just a kind of a nitpicking thing, where it, on page, on line 18, 19, 20, where it talks about any natural or non-military man-made cause, including but not limited to, and it lists fire and on and on and on. Would glaciation be one, or is that necessary? Would that be covered?
Avalanche, I wouldn't say a glacier would be.
Glaciation, no.
Serious glaciation?
Is that a, would that be a, an additional word we might want, or, you know, where?
It's better from my experience. Really, you're kind of opening up a bucket of worms, because in the first place, you're planning the zoning of the area. You should make it so that people are not building near a glaciated stream. We have a situation out on Farmers Loop Road in Fairbanks. They got 5 feet of ice. We've lost a road. And there's really no no corrective action except just move off.
But wouldn't this be a reasonable thing to add here? I keep thinking of the areas of the road through Isabella Pass, in that area that some places that glaciate, and there's other places where they might be able to move it that don't.
Yeah.
Well, the only thing
out. Proper first glaciation depends upon the thermals. You have a warm winter. Have a real heavy snow, and you'll have heavy glaciers. You have a light snow, you have deep frost, you have light glaciers.
But if you had that condition under the word verbiage that we have in the law, could you do anything about it? That's why I brought it up. You might want to do something about it.
You need to do it someday, yeah.
Senator, I'm Jim Baldwin in Legislative Affairs. I'm attorney with the agency. And I think the language is that you're, where the list is of all the conditions that may happen, that's just descriptive language. It indicates that it's
not limited.
It includes, but it's not limited to the following conditions.
Okay, well,
if you want to give the department, usually it applies to nothing but man-made or natural disasters. Okay. The list is really instructing the department of what really are 100% man-made or natural disasters, and it wouldn't hurt to add things.
I would like other to, type of things. Mr. Chairman.
Isn't necessary.
I'd like to move that we add in here ahead of, after wind-driven water and ahead of weather condition, chronic glaciation.
Okay. Would anybody see any objection to that?
I ask unanimous consent. Okay.
Life cycle cost of highway construction, including maintenance costs when specialized road construction technology for northern climates is used compared to the cost of conventional construction methods, including maintenance. project shall continue for a period of not to exceed 10 years. Department shall submit a biennium report to the legislature of the results of the project. Report shall be submitted before 1 January of even number year. We have a Department of Research, and we've been conducting these projects like this for well over 17 years. And if anybody needs any of that information, we can supply it by the truckload or by the paper.
What you're saying is that this would be redundant?
Well, they're asking for a special project for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
We already have a research department that is federally paid for by federal funds. We need our HPR funds, our highway planning research funds, for which we have, this has already been done.
Would putting it in statutory authority, would that stop you from doing it the way you are, or might it not recognize that it was a necessary thing and that we want it maybe even amplified because we call here for a biennial report to the legislature? I should think annual would be enough.
Well,
how can a biennial report be submitted before January 1st of each even-numbered year? The biannual is wrong, isn't it?
Yeah.
Huh?
Must be incorrect.
It's a semi-annual.
Every 2 years.
No, huh?
Biannual means every 2 years.
Biannual every 2 years.
Every 2 years.
Semi-annual every half year. All right.
Well, all I'm bringing to your attention is that we already have programs that are doing this. See, we're tied in with coal regions, which is Creo. We've got, how many active projects have we got going up there now? We probably have at least 25 active projects right now.
I hadn't discussed that with Senator Cotulla. Do you have it? What's your feeling about
that?
Well,
I wouldn't want it taken out of there without.
Yeah.
I know that when I joined Senator Cotulla on the bill, I am aware of the fact that you have plenty of research, but I am also aware of the fact that we hire engineers who have no idea of the research that was done on Project 06951 3 years ago, and that engineer conducts the same research again on another job, and we pay for it. I know I spent enough time working on radios, on road jobs, that I watched one engineering project after the other in little stretches of road where they did the same thing that I'd seen done 5 years or 10 years before, just as though somebody had lost the records.
Oh, that's true. That's and very true. It's just like buildings, too. It's similar to anything. There's so much information available that, in fact, I think there probably might be too much information.
How do we separate it and make sure that is important, particularly in cold regions building? It seems
now no one can get registration in the state unless they have gone to Arctic Engineering, which up until 3 years ago was not possible. And in fact, I have a class at the University of Alaska. It'll be starting probably in about another month for about maybe 60 or 70 engineers, Canadian engineers, that will be involved with the naming of the Alaska Highway.
Well, Commissioner, I see this section as something in there that it may not be worded just right, but something that can be a definite addition to what you're already doing and recognizing it. And I know Jelmer would not have put it in there just for something redundant, or 'tisn't even election year for Jelmer. So I'm pretty sure that it isn't that. This is easier to carry the basket home full. But I think that it is what I thought of when I joined the bill was those particular items. The same thing on that section one. It seems to be three almost disconnected ideas that the bill is centered on. Yet section one, I think, is no different than what you're doing, is it?
Not a bit.
And I think maybe it's putting it in statute that would do this. Maybe he wants to be sure that when we change people, they'll continue to do it, and maybe some engineers.
See, this is the whole thing.
See, I also worry about good old Woody up in my district, because Woody has always been a power unto himself and done as he damn pleased. And I'd like to see him given some firm direction sometimes, and it's hard to firmly direct Woody.
Woody gets firm direction, though. Woody gets firm direction, though. He only probably gives you the inference that he runs his own job. Woody and I are very close. He gets some very positive direction.
Woody and I have been fighting for many years, and it isn't because I don't recognize his abilities. He's probably the best cold weather's road engineer or knows more about it for Pioneer Roads than anyone in the country. But
that comes from a mining background.
It certainly does, but that doesn't mean that he is best for an urban area to be making the decisions that he makes like Fairbanks. And I refer to simple little things like 364 no right turn on red signs on Airport Road in order to thwart the city council's ordinance that allowed right turns on red. Those kind of things don't, you know, the man is not being used in his right capacity when he is able to make those arbitrary.
Well, he doesn't make that decision. That decision is made by our safety people.
That may be made now by your safety people, but that was made by Woody Johansson at the time it was made. And if you wanted the minutes of the meeting and the good planning and highway engineering that went behind it, it was one simple thing, as a quote by Woody Johansson, that right turns on red are inherently dangerous, quote, and a little child could be killed and that would be awful, unquote. That was the engineering or anything else behind it, Ed. Woody had those kind of powers in the past, which I'm not sure that he has anymore under the Department of Transportation.
Well, all that, any design has to go through the schematics of safety, the safety engineer, everything.
Well, we got rid of all of those no right turn on red signs, but it took some doing and it cost some money and it caused a lot of problems and it had a lot of people get tickets in Fairbanks, including the former commissioner of public safety.
Yeah,
but
nicer guy.
Huh?
Well, okay, what do we want to
do? It helped get rid of them. I recall the last one cost me $864 in a House election to get rid of it, but I got rid of her 2 weeks after the election. But the $864 worth of television exposure from a one-minute movie on election day, and that's all I showed. Go to the polls and vote, and how do you like this? 2 weeks later, the last one came down. But you know, you shouldn't have to, just because a man is a top engineer and has been given a highly responsible position that has a very, very broad powers, somebody else, if it was like it is now, or like I'm told it is now, that somebody higher up is reviewing, he wouldn't have been able to make the unilateral decision that there'll be no right turns on red on Airport Road in spite of the city council, by God. The rest of the state, it wasn't a uniform policy. In Anchorage, we copied the Anchorage ordinance. This was before the state had it uniform on right
turns.
Well,
this was before we had FMAS, Senator.
Yeah.
FMAS has done a lot. Of course, I lived in Fairbanks for some 30 years, too, and I know there's three ways of doing things. The right way, the wrong way, and the way we do it in Fairbanks. You know? I understand that very much. And anytime somebody comes up against the machine, way wrong. You know? I know. I've been there.
Well, you know, it just showed a difference between what the engineers in the various, the head man in the various departments were allowed. In Anchorage, the city council had an ordinance that allowed right turns on red. And what happened? In Anchorage, it was fine. on state roads and on city roads. And in fact, the state police and everybody cooperated, people who made right turns on red in Anchorage outside of town, though the state code didn't authorize it yet. They didn't pinch him, they didn't take him to court or anything, they observed the city ordinance outside of town. As soon as we transplanted that ordinance up to Fairbanks, Woody, by the way, fought it for 6 months. He delayed the ordinance for 4 months, and then finally it was 2 months more before it took effect. As soon as it took effect, he ordered 364 no right turn on red signs, and about 99% of them were in the city of Fairbanks. And so in Fairbanks, you couldn't do it under the same law, word for word, period for period, comma for comma, that was in Anchorage. And it showed that that was Woody's power. He had the power to do that. He shouldn't have had the power. Now, we know it's different now because the Uniform Traffic Code has changed. I went back to Washington and sat there and voted when we voted New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Massachusetts and those other, I think the original 13 colonies, I believe it was, that were sticking against no right turns on red. So finally the state changed it then too, so we don't have to worry about that anymore. But it does show that we had unilateral powers on the part of a man that was too far. It went too far, couldn't even have uniformity throughout the state.
Okay, let's get back to 387.
Yep.
Anyone else want to comment? Did you have
yes, sir.
Comments?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Ben Benedictson, Managing Director of the Alaska Trucking Association. The Trucking Association is very much in favor, as I gather the state is, of this contingency money for repairs. I would like to offer into the record a series of six statements made by truck drivers last summer during the time in which the Elliott Highway was taking, I was having so much trouble as a result of the unseasonable rains. If I may read just a couple of items. At this time, by the way, I received, again, a whole series of complaints from them. And it's our view that this money would be used to repair or to take care of this sort of a function. Quote, from Mr. Francis X. Hoffman, Sourdough Express, it's a hazard to commercial, and he's speaking of the Elliott Highway. It's a hazard to commercial and public traffic. The roads are not graded properly in the summer and not properly maintained in the winter. I'm sure that they should have enough incentive to maintain such a vital link to Prudhoe Bay. A memo from Mr. Phil, I think it's Rubiax. I can count on one hand the number of times I've seen graders working on the roads. We're going through mud 6 to 8 inches deep and potholes 1 to 1.5 feet deep. Jack Nolan, I, Jack Nolan, owner-operator, at least a Sourdough Express, drive the Elliott and Taps Road 2 and 3 trips a week for a living. These roads need work bad. They're endangering life and property. The other three are essentially the same. I'd like to offer these again as supporting documentation for the... Section 3, which was discussed earlier of Senate Bill 387, we have some concern about this. I think it's more academic than anything else. We feel that that this is probably good, and we're in favor of this sort of testing, which is being done by the Department of Transportation. However, we would recommend that perhaps the wording of this could be a little tighter, in as much as it doesn't really specify where the test would be. Where, for example, are you talking about South Central, or are you talking about the north of the Arctic Circle? What specialized construction methods are you discussing, or do you want done that are not now being done? For example, the Soviets are doing a considerable amount of work with ice roads and with frozen lakes and stream beds. If this is what we have in mind, that's one thing. But if it's a different, separate construction method, that's something else. I think it probably should be spelled out a little tighter and a little more exactly. These are all the remarks that I have on behalf of the Trucking Association. Thank you for the chance to be here.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Are there questions? Nope. Are there any other comments? John, how about passing this out subject to consulting with Senator Kutula on Section 3 with a possibility of maybe getting with Skoog and taking your comments into consideration on maybe tightening it up a little bit.
I'll move it out with the DuPass subject to us reviewing the
Section 3.
Reviewing Section 3, and I'm not asking that Section 3 be taken out.
I understand.
If you decide to take it out, I'd like to have a chance to bring it back to committee.
Okay, and if there's a question, We'll pass it out then with the understanding that with Senator Krutula's concurrence, if we can tighten it up to address your concerns, it'll go out that way. If it comes out, we'll bring it back up at the on an early meeting, probably the next meeting, for the possibility of deleting it, if that is indeed necessary.
We certainly want to listen to what Commissioner Schlegel says.
Yes.
We don't want to turn around here and replace a federally funded program with a state-funded program or turn over something and shut off what's going on. I am concerned about this. If he's already doing this, maybe the main danger of this is saying that the project terminates in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the main danger.
Okay, then the motion then would be to pass out
a due pass
recommendation, Senate Bill 387, with the stipulations that we did address ourselves to. And I'll see that Senator Krutula does touch bases with you before, you know, it's changed.
I might add that we have all of it, Senator, that we have all the data, research data, coming in now on the construction of the north, so all of it. There is literally millions of dollars worth of that data there.
Fine, thank you. Mr. Chairman, my apologies for being late, but I got hung up with a constituent.
Okay.
I always give them priority.
Okay, I can understand that.
I read the bills and I think I approve them all.
We've got a due pass on, you don't object to 387 then going out with a due pass.
Pass.
387
is this bill. Unless something come up here that I didn't anticipate.
Well, there was some stipulations that we're passing it out. We're going to review section 3 of it with the Senator Krutula and Schlegel, and him may address section 3 and tighten it up a little
to make sure it don't get crossways with our present programs, basically.
Senator Willis, if you would want me to make a comment to Mr. Benedictine's remarks, I might tell you that there is 26 miles of that particular road coming up for bid here. Well, I hope it's out advertised here by the 1st of March. So,
Mr. Chairman, is that from Elliott to Livingston of Livingood?
Again, I wasn't using this as an example to try to put anybody on the pad, certainly, but it is an example of the sort of thing that does happen to us. And it would be what I would hope that those monies would be used for, that sort of thing.
Gee, I hate to squeeze out the pad. That piece of road you're talking about, that's worse than the Taps Road, isn't it?
By far.
By far.
By far. The North Slope Hall Road is a boulevard compared to the Elliott Highway, and you know, we tried to do something about it. In 70, I went back to DC.
I was thinking, Scoog, that it doesn't, the more recent ideas we heard on the Hall Road not being open to the public for some considerable time, when all the traffic on the Hall Road has to go through that bottleneck of the Elliott Highway, I should think they'd have been more reasonably directed toward closing the Elliott Highway and opening that one.
Okay. Okay, then we have one more bill, and that's Senate Bill 385, and that addresses the appropriation of $5 million. To fund the act that we just discussed in Senate Bill 387. Well,
Mr. Chairman, being that we went through everything on 387, unless the commissioner wants to oppose the appropriation, I thought we covered it well enough, but I'd sure like to move it out.
Does anybody have any comment about the figure, one way or another?
There's three distinct bodies in this state, the legislative, the executive, and the judicial, and the appropriation is your business.
We don't authorize and don't appropriate.
Sure. But that is the appropriate amount of money.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move the bill out, due pass.
No objection.
I didn't think Scoob was going to tell us to give him the authorization and not the money. You know, something nice and new, like, we don't need the financing end of it, we've got the money, just give us the authority.
Okay, is there anything else to come up before the committee? Any other comments you might have? Okay. Okay, if there's no objections, then the committee stands adjourned.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you, gentlemen, for
coming. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir.
Ben.
It's really hard on you.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you. Around this committee. Hi, guys, you know, John, it's over here.
I like to stay a fast committee. They don't get a guy around here. I go back and answer some correspondence.
Well, we don't want to keep these hard-working senators away from the more important business.
Glenn, you know, I said, I'm glad you cut that thing down to two meetings per
week. That forces us to take, you know, these people get long-winded.
You know, they talk so slow. You know, anytime it's testifies, they talk so slow. It's that they got all year to get it out.
Yeah.
They repeat themselves.
Yeah, this is ours. Let's keep that for Cthulhu, and he might want it to carry the bills. I'll hand carry this because I do want to talk to Cthulhu about that one section.
They have a reprint here. They can just scribble out, put white, and print. He's putting in right with a pencil.
Yeah, I would think so. I think we'd be very close to it because you've got the Department of Law, and you've got all the offices, and you've got the
Court of Congress facilities. We won't make a mistake. Thank you, son. It's in that folder, I think.
Whose bill is it?
That's State Affairs Committee substitute to the governor's bill.
This is governor's bill.
Okay, then we're going to have a State Affairs substitute for the governor's on roads, too.
That's fine, is that?
Fine.
On his
hey,
level.
That's my big.
Hey.
Sure. Hey.
Where do I sign?
No,
this
I
is
say
yours.
When we...
I'm ready.
This is yours. Huh? Tell me what this is now. I signed it. That's,
oh,
that's the subcommittee joy. On
a,
joyriding.
Yeah, we have this as a subcommittee. Huber had to have it worked over.
I think he's wrong.
Well, God, I don't know. I can hold it here forever.
No,
what about no right?
What I'm trying to say
it's
is
going to the judiciary. So
what is he doing? This was originally my bill. I was the one to put joyriding on the books because otherwise you couldn't get anything. You couldn't get a conviction. Otherwise. So you say that the only way you could steal a car, like in Juneau, was where you would reasonably going to steal it and,
well, let's make
and deprive an owner of the use of the car.
Let's make Hubert.
This well, is the third time we take it from Juneau. This thing.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Let me read it. This one, sir.
It's going to
wait. So is a marijuana bill going to be this year? You think we can smoke them out?
Well, this is coming out. I don't know about that one.
Person who drives toes away.
Boy, I didn't know the house
builder was on. That's a person who is an accessory to now. He's not a team.
Well, this is your police protection thing that you're stealing from.
With intent temporarily approved. All right. That's got it.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is your.
This is the one that I said. That's what I said, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I thought we took care of it, but I wasn't.
I thought that was right, but I'll put no rec on it anyway.
He's got five committees on this.
You know why I put no rec on it?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Individual, right? Bite sharp in 2 minutes.
We got all kinds of heroes here for the Bill Ray package. And here's the bilingualism, up or down.
You ready to testify if I call you? Are you ready to testify now?
We will hold them in any order that you want, Mr. Well. Chairman, right?
I guess we could probably bring up 404.
These are done.
Can we bring up 404?
Remember that one must be typed. Senate State Affairs Committee substitute. 404.
Well,
406, 404, 403, 405. 404. Is that your recommendation?
404, so that we can first.
There should be copies of every bill right here.
Do you want me to proceed, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Would the Municipal League lobby please come up here?
Senator Ray is subcommittee chairman.
Yeah, we have an amendment there. I have an amendment, Mr. Chairman, and it's at the request of the Alaska Municipal League. I've talked to of the Alaska Public Employees Association representatives, and also I've talked to the representative of the Alaska Municipal League, and they would like to have political subdivisions removed from the from this act, and also 406 at a future time.
You're moving then and asking us consent to remove our
and its political subdivisions, which I believe is in the title.
Yes.
Line 7 and 8.
Line 7 and 8. Is there any objection to unanimous consent to remove the title and its political subdivisions, line 7 and 8, page 1, Senate Bill 404? Being no objection, that's deleted by amendment.
Disagreeable to you,
certainly.
Ms. Miller?
Yes. Thank you.
This is what your people want, right?
That's exactly right.
Is
there anybody here for you? You have no objection,
no
APA?
Objection.
Mr. Administrative Assistant, you have that down. Mm-hmm. This amendment. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Ms. Miller.
No further questions?
We are on 406. Do you want to continue with 404, sir?
If you have that same amendment to 406, let's go to
all
that
right.
too, Mr.
All right.
Chairman.
I have the same amendment to 406.
Here, do you have a copy of that bill? 406. Let's get those technical ones done before
all right.
we go into the.
Here again is the amendment delete and its political subdivisions, which would remove the political subdivisions from the bill. This is again at the instigation of the Municipal League and also in agreement with the APEA. And I would move and ask unanimous consent that we would accept that amendment, Mr. Chairman, to Senate Bill 406. It's just a technical amendment.
Without objections.
All right.
All right. We have them both out. So we would now return to Senate Bill 404. Do you have people who wish to testify, Senator Ray?
On the 404, this is the extending benefits of group insurance to the certain of the temporary employees. I believe that the APA people are here to testify. Would you like to come and give some testimony? I think we're familiar with it, but just briefly, would you state your name, ma'am, and who you represent and what your position is on it?
I'm Sherry Shelley, and I represent APEA, and our position is we're recommending that this bill do pass. Basically, this bill extends group insurance to temporary employees who are previously not covered with any group insurance. As of December, there were 1,500 state employees and APA, temporary state employees, and APA represented approximately 1,100 of those employees. The opposition we have received from the state is time and time again, when we go to the bargaining table, they will say, temporary employees are precluded by statute from receiving health benefits, so you have to go to the legislature. then when we went to the House State Affairs Committee, the state came in and said, you can't legislate this. This is an area of collective bargaining. And I would point out that in Exhibit 9, which I provided this committee, which is an opinion of the Attorney General, the Attorney General said in that opinion, it is expressly held that life insurance, health insurance, and liability insurance are negotiable absent statutory restrictions. And in our negotiations last week in an arbitration, the arbitrator said there are statutory restrictions on temporary employees, and the only way they can get benefits is for a change in the statute.
Do you believe that there are cases, and these cases are becoming increasingly prevalent, in which people are hired as temporary so that they will be not put on permanent status, and for all intents and purposes they are permanent positions but are serving in a temporary capacity?
Yes, sir, I do. And in one example, in Exhibit 8, which I provided this committee, which is just Division of Public Assistance, in that exhibit, there are seven positions which have asterisks. Those positions are permanent PCN positions which are filled by temporaries, and this is just a cost-saving device.
I wonder, if at this time your office, could you substantiate this also, sir, or do you have a different opinion on it?
Oh, basically, I wanted to testify on 405.
On 405?
405.
405. Anybody else here on 404?
I have a question or two.
Yes.
And I think you're correct. We shouldn't have the people that are on the inside or the outside. That's just not right. So, again, the House State Affairs Committee does, in philosophy at least, make a good point. I think you've established the fact that this does need statutory change. But when you can go to the bargaining table, that's where it should be done. It shouldn't be done in the legislature. You know that you have collective bargaining, and I feel very strongly about that, too.
For the people that we can collectively bargain for, we would agree, you know, as to what the benefits are, that is where it should be handled. But we cannot collectively bargain for temporary under the current statute.
These, Mr. Chairman, are non-persons.
Yes, I understand what you're saying, and I agree to. Just want to reiterate.
I think it's your philosophy, at least it's been shown to me in our many years of association in the legislature, that you've always been fair-minded toward the state employees and have thought every person working for the state should get equal pay for equal time and have equal benefits.
Well, you've been a leader in this, Senator Ray, and I think that I've pretty much agreed with your position. I just wanted to be sure that the position of the House State Affairs Committee, in those areas which you can collectively bargain for, we shouldn't go to try to change statutes besides. And I hear you. I'm sorry to be late.
If there are no other persons to testify on 404, Mr. Chairman,
yes, sir.
I would move and ask unanimous consent that we send out Senate Bill number 404 with individual recommendations.
As amended?
As amended, yes, sir.
Without objection. So done. You have the next bill, Mr.
406.
Senator. Do you need copies?
I think I have a copy here.
Okay.
This is the extending the benefits of the public employees retirement system to temporary employees, and this is the same proposition that we have on the previous bill, sir. And we're dealing with temporary employees, or those people who are dealing with the state and in a temporary position. And I noticed the state has taken a position that you don't have to jump through hoops to enter state government, you don't have to jump through hoops to get out. But apparently you have to hang by your thumbs in order to get coverage. And we're going to take them down from the pillory, sir, and put them in just like everybody else. And temporaries will be treated just like everybody else. Would you care to testify on that, ma'am?
Yes, sir. The time prescribed in this bill is 1,000 hours. That the temporaries would not be vested in the retirement program until they have completed 1,000 hours. This standard was taken from the ERISA standard, which is the standards used by the federal government for their retirement system. And Exhibit 6, which I provided this committee, which is a status of temporary employees of December 17th, 77, shows the number of temporary employees who exceeded 6 or 9 months, and we have temporaries working for time periods like 32 months, 13 months, 20 months, 17 months, for long periods of time. So that's after they completed the 1,000 hours or 6 months of service, they could, if they remained in position, participate in the retirement
Isn't the
program.
6 months of, Mr. Chairman, if I might, six months, that's more or less a probation period that's in effect now, and in order to qualify as a state employee, that they have a probationary period of 6 months.
Yes, they do have a probationary period, although they do start participating in the retirement period right. from day one.
All right. But they have to go through 1,000 hours before they qualify, even though...
Permanent people do not, but temporaries would.
Temporaries would, all right.
Are there any questions of the witness?
I have no other questions, sir.
Senator Wells?
No.
Senator Bradley?
In fairness to Senator Bradley, I think as a subcommittee chairman, sir, what we're doing is we're going on 406 now, which is to provide retirement benefits for temporaries after we're... They're having served 1,000 hours of state employment or 6 months.
Yeah, it's approximately 6 months.
Right,
sir. I just got through reading them. I was a little late getting back, and I went to the wrong floor. Nothing in the testimony contradicts anything that we can read and surmise it's in interpret from this bill, I don't suppose.
Sure.
Does anyone else wish to testify on this piece of legislation? You moved on it, did you?
Yes, sir, and ask unanimous consent. Put out with individual recommendations, sir.
Yes. As amended.
As amended.
Oh, what was the amendment?
Just deleting subdivisions.
Delete municipalities from provisions of this.
It's in the title.
From the title.
It's at the request of the Municipal League and also with the agreement of the Alaska Public Employees Association.
Right, sir. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, sir. And now, Mr. Chairman, as we do have witnesses here, perhaps we should bring up Senate Bill 405 at this time.
I understand they are short timers. They have to catch a plane, so let us do that. Senate Bill 405 is now before us. Any witness?
Go ahead.
Sir, would you like to?
Just a minute, I'll pass out copies to those.
Would you like to state your name and either your support or opposition?
Witness, bring the copy.
Frank Lavin, the State Ombudsman. I'd like to speak in favor of Senate Bill 405.
Are you and Senator Ray on the same side on something?
Oh, yes.
I think we're on the same side on most everything.
I think so. In regard to the Senate Bill 405, I think it's good that the temporary situation is being handled as a package, because I think the situation with temporaries right now hurts the individual employee that is a temporary, and it also hurts a primary source of our complaints, which are state residents that are attempting to get state employment through the merit system, get on state registers. And basically, temporary jobs are sort of like mad money. They're sort of mad positions. You don't have to answer to the merit registers. You don't get perusal from the finance committees as far as allocating positions. And it's basically a loophole in the whole structure of the personnel system. We get a substantial number of complaints from people that are on the state eligibility registers for jobs. They compete to get ranked on registers under the assumption that for merit jobs they're going to be hired on the basis of where they rank on those particular registers. We find in many instances the agencies can get around the registered of qualified employees by hiring temporaries to do the same exact job, thereby circumventing the registers. And this particular piece of legislation would eliminate that particular loophole.
Mr. Flavin, don't you find, or do you find, in your position, the information is given to you that almost every state agency has a little bit, I guess women call it mad money, and men call it the holdout money, and in which they have a little bit of money left over, which they are hiring people in temporary positions and more or less cover it up, and not giving the exact information to the finance committees or to the committees of jurisdiction as to the need for certain employees, and they have a bulk of money, and they use these on PCN numbers and use these as temporaries, and that's what the conditions we are now. Is that what you're referring
that's
to?
That's true. We run into a number of times what I would characterize as permanent temporary positions. You can go back to the agency year after year and find a temporary occupying a position, which is really not listed by a position control number. There's never been authorized by the legislature. Basically, I guess what happens is they get an X amount of money for the permanent employees, and through vacancy ratios and this type of thing, there's money that is saved, and instead of being returned, of course, it's they hire temporary employees. We find there's basically three types of temporaries. One would be, you know, your what was envisioned with temporaries in the first place, orders a five or six month job or 3 or 4 month job, one shot deal that would be filled by an employee for that limited period of time, a temporary job, and then a job is gone. The other types of temporaries are where you have a merit position, but all of the authorized positions are full. And so in order to get employees above the authorized number, you hire temporaries to do the same thing, which I can is sort of an abuse of the legislative process, I would guess. And then the second abuse I run into is where there's an open merit job, but you have a temporary employee doing the same exact job as is in the temporary slot. So basically what you've done there is circumvented the merit principles.
Mr. Flavin, Mr. Chairman. D on page 1 on 405, section D, line 25, temporary appointments to position in state service may not exceed 10% of the total number of classified state employees. That is a substantial number, of course, but I'm wondering why they chose 10%. It should be in some ways...
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that that's within the purview of Mr. Flavin's testimony, and when we have the APEA people, I would imagine, could answer that directly.
I just want to ask him one question on the subject, though. Is there anything in your experiences that indicate that purposefully large numbers of state employees are being hired on a temporary basis, way above the 10% level? Is this some type of subterfuge to get around legislative?
I think it's above 10%, and we've been involved with this issue quite a bit, and at one point I just went through the Blue Book, which was the only source of information I had, and just computed by agency how many temporaries they had in relation to the total number of employees, and it varied widely, but the totals that I came up with indicated larger than 10%, which I think presents a problem constitutionally, since the Constitution mandates that there be a system of employment based upon merit principles, and if you've got 10%, well, it's probably around 15% or something like that now, at least. You've got that 15% plus the total number of partially exempt and exempt employees added together, that's a substantial percentage of the total workforce. I would think that at some point in time, you're sort of pushing that constitutional requirement of a merit employment system.
What departments or major offenders of your sensibilities in this constitutional matter?
I think most of the departments that we've dealt with have,
just a particularly policy, a state policy.
Have above the required number of temporaries.
I have no further questions. Any questions from anybody else?
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
Possibly, are you here to give the testimony, Ms. Bradley?
My name is Janet Bradley. I represent the Human Rights Commission. The Executive Director, Neil Thomas, has instructed me to talk today on Senate Bill 405 and to support it. As you know, the Human Rights Commission, somewhat like the Ombudsman, is required during the course of its investigations to look at the personnel system. This requires that we pull the list of eligibles and we review the applications and we do an in-depth analysis of how people get hired into state government in classified positions. And what we find is that the use of temporaries can sometimes be a means by which hiring from among the top five can be avoided or subverted. Now, how does this happen? Well, if a person is not able to qualify on the register and yet the hiring authority desires to have that person on staff, that person frequently is placed in a temporary position until he or she has acquired the necessary minimum qualifications to then be hired on after getting on the list of eligibles in the Division of Personnel. However, also during the course of our investigations, what we find is the lack of minorities and females among the top five. And this presents a problem in terms of affirmative action, in terms of equal employment opportunity. Therefore, what we'd like to have you consider is that the use of the waiver, if this bill should pass, all temporaries would then have to be from the list of eligibles and the merit system would prevail. We are unopposed to that. What we would propose is that a mechanism such as the waiver be utilized to promote equal employment opportunity within state government. And the way this would work is the Division of Personnel would recognize that a waiver to hire a temporary person into employment for the purpose of enabling that person to eventually be hired into permanent employment to qualify and to then be promoted into the regular system could accomplish the goals of this state as articulated by the Affirmative Action Plan. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have and to work with the committee in developing such an amendment.
You're suggesting amendment to this legislation or a separate piece of legislation?
No, I think it could be a one-liner. The idea would be that, and I think it's already there, we would just like to have the legislature provide the statutory authority to grant the Division of Personnel the opportunity to recognize the waiver for the purposes of achieving equal employment opportunity as a bona fide reason.
Possibly we could handle that with a letter of intent from this committee. Rather than, I don't, Mr. Bradley, I think...
Our concern is that...
The concern is females and minorities, is it?
Well, not? Also the handicapped.
And the handicapped.
And the handicapped. Those persons in the protected classes where the state recognizes that it has an obligation. And, of course,
I don't mean to interrupt you, sure. But what I'm getting at is that I think that really... I don't see how you could amend this. I think it would be the subject of a different piece of legislation entirely that you'd have to come up with, and I don't even think it would come under. I don't even think it would come under the statute, unless there's in some other section of it. But under this,
what I was considering, Senator Ray, was under Section C, where you speak to the waiver of the requirements. Some language to the effect that the Division of Personnel shall recognize this waiver as a means of achieving equal employment opportunity.
We'll have our attorney take a quick look at your suggestion. I think that, I think probably if, you could, if the tapes are running all right, if you'd call for the attorney to, that drafted Senate Bill 405, call her Bill Barrier. Call Bill Barrier's office and ask him if they can send the attorney over to draft Senate Bill 405. They could come right over. Maybe we could expedite this. In the meantime, you could sit down with Pam and then bring it back to committee while we're hearing on the, from the balance of the witnesses.
Is that acceptable to the sponsor, Senator Ray?
I'll have to. I have no objection to it, other than the fact that I'm not sure that this is the right place to put it. To tell you the truth.
We'll bring over our bill drafter.
This is the place that you would put it, and as such, the intent is, I have no objection to the intent.
I think that your intention is already there, and I think that the waiver, you know, would provide for this situation. What we would be happy to see is that the legislature would provide an opportunity to show the executive the statutory authority to do what obligation, you know, to achieve the obligation it already has.
If the intention can be read into the existing language, then letter of intent will do that.
So long as Division of Personnel has the opportunity to...
We have a new method. Now, excuse me for interfering, but we have a new method. A letter of intent passed by both bodies recorded in the journal is, at least in theory, final action. Definition of a particular word structure, a particular paragraph.
The APEA, I don't imagine would have any objection to that if it's been proper in the proper place.
We have no objection to her objectives. We don't want to see it.
I'm afraid that this is not the right place to put it. That's all. I think that
we'll bring legal counsel.
Yeah, I would.
I'll be happy to step outside and work with
Senator Bradley. Seems to have a question.
Mr. Chairman. The extent of the waiver, it just refers to A and B here. And as Senator Ray says, you know, a waiver is good, but I think you need to explain just how far this waiver is to go, the parameters of the waiver. You know, I believe in handicapped people are having some priority, but then you're discriminating if you give them undue.
You've covered it. That was what I was afraid of, and that that we might be getting into.
It would take more than a one-line
reverse discrimination.
Explanation
is what I'm getting at.
Right.
We might get into a reverse part, and I wouldn't want to do that.
Well, I don't think that would necessarily be a problem because, number one, you are providing waivers for other persons, and therefore the distinctions would not necessarily fall along the lines of race or sex or the handicapped or whatever. Plus, I think that you should consider that the reason why you're using this mechanism is to correct a problem that presently exists in state government.
Well,
And that problem needs correction, and that is the underutilization of certain classes.
Do I understand you correctly, Mr. Bradley, that you are saying that you want a waiver for those females, minorities, and handicapped, that they would not have to be on the eligible list in order for appointment?
In order to originally achieve appointment.
Then I...
You got it described?
I think you're...
You just about board the requirements are in A and B, the minimum qualifications. You just say they can be waived, period.
Well, this, of course, would provide them an opportunity to achieve the permanent list because of the opportunity to learn on the job.
I'd like to see our bill drafter sit down on in a few minutes here.
I think that I would be inclined to want that in a separate bill because I'm not sure that...
it's going to be controversial. I think you're right.
I'm afraid you're going to have problems with it. But
I'll be happy to step outside and talk to the attorney and then get back to you.
Thank
you very much.
Thank you very kindly for your testimony.
Are there any further...
Spray, I believe.
Thanks.
Can I get a copy of the bill?
Right here.
Just look at it so I can respond to it.
Thank you, sir.
My name is Ken Spray, Vice President and Spokesman for Alaska Public Service Employees Local 71, representing the Labor Trades and Craft Unit, approximately 1,500 state employees. I understand that the House State Affairs has exempted us from Section 1, Para A, which, if it wouldn't be exempted here, we would feel an amendment would have to be added there, something along the line.
I missed you, Mr. Spray. Could you...
I understand that that under Section 1, Paragraph A, on line 15, that... and 16. Last night in House State Affairs, they exempted Local 71 from that, which I don't have a problem with. If this legislation, in order to correct what we consider that to be a problem, the only problem is that we have a referral system we agreed to in our contract with the state of Alaska. If you read that literally, it says temporary appointments should be made only from eligible lists for appointment, and eligible list would be the register. That's the state's eligibility register, not ours. And I had proposed some language, something along the line, that except as otherwise provided for a collective bargaining agreement. I understand that wasn't totally accepted last night. I understand what they did is not going to harm us. That's the only problem we had with this piece of legislation.
Well, maybe we can get the bill drafter to sit down with you here and put it in proper context and bring it up yet as an amendment.
Mr. Chairman, could you very briefly, I didn't get all that you were driving at there.
To add on to line 16.
So you took the copy of my bill.
To add on to line 16, some language along the line to say, except as otherwise provided for in a collective bargaining agreement. We have it in our contract. We refer all positions to the state in our unit, temporaries and otherwise. And just a couple of points of interest along that particular line. First off, looking at and maybe, as the chairman said, we can get together with the bill drafter and resolve that problem. I really didn't have a problem with the language until Mr. Hunt explained what he considered eligible list to be, at which time I certainly did have problems. I don't think we'd want to lose that. I'm trying to pick the right words. When we refer temporary employees out, we normally get the call through the state system, and we go to our list and pick the temporary employee to go out. We do have some restrictions there that other organizations don't have. For example, they can only go out for 120 days on that job, and they can be extended upon mutual agreement. And one prime example of that, and I think this adds to why we need legislation, is right here in Juneau in the Marine Transportation Department. With the formation of DOT, there's a big push on to not hire new positions. I think that maybe that has some very justified reasoning behind it. But we find situations, and I've got one in particular, a stock handler in Marine Trans that went out as a temporary and served his 120 days. They wanted to extend that employee. If I would have refused to extend him, they would have placed another call to us for another temporary. So we extended him. He moved up to the next step in the pay, and he's now on his second 120 days, and chances are there'll be another approach to another extension. I had asked the department that we would mutually agree to extend if they would submit in their budget a permanent position. Well, they said they cannot do that Commissioner Harris will not let them do that. So in effect, they're filling that position, Mr. Chairman, by a temporary employee. And that's just one that just happened within the last week or so.
Getting back to the point that Mrs. Bradley raised, and if taken in context with yours, they are incompatible. There's no way they could survive.
I think what former spokesman before this committee talked about probably wouldn't belong in this legislation.
No,
I don't have a problem with what she's trying to say. Matter of fact, we do our best to comply with affirmative action in that respect.
They couldn't do it under collective bargaining act. They couldn't do it at all.
Seems to me the subject of separate legislation because it's going to be
brought it to my attention by saying collective bargaining and all of a sudden it snapped into that there was no way possible it would be compatible.
That's I kind of thought along the same lines, yeah. Senator. I think separate legislation may be the answer. The concept I certainly uphold and agree with, but I think maybe it ought to be a separate piece of legislation to be resolved.
And what is the nature of your...
We're in support of this legislation if we can get some protection under Section A there that we don't lose the right to refer temporary employees out. We have, like I say, the 120-day restriction on that, and we have never had the serious problems that the general government has.
Your union tends to be one that probably has to deal a lot with temporary employees. Because
we get them, yes, sir, especially in the summer months, and then, of course, in the winter, depending upon the snow or depending upon the forest fires or whatever it may be. I don't believe we've ever exceeded 10% of our 1,500 or more than 150, although that's possible. We did very closely go to that area. But normally, it's on an average of about 30 positions in the state. We are able, by having the restriction of the 100-day, convince some departments to fill that PC in with a permanent instead of temporary, saying, okay, we'll give it to you the 120-day. Next time, no extension unless you agree to do what you should do. The legislators gave you that PCN number, let's fill the position and use it that way. Last year in the grounds, right here in Juneau, we did that. We had a temporary employee. We extended that temporary employee with an understanding that they would put in their budget request a permanent seasonal position in the groundsman. They did that. It passed, and that person now is a permanent seasonal.
Yeah.
But we have a little better control.
You have to use a rule of good sense because we're all taxpayers, and you can't have people to clear snow on year-round.
That's true, and we do have snow removal crews, and those are the ones that where we do get the temporary, so that... Section 1D, the 10% thing, that figure wouldn't really disrupt us because I don't think we've ever exceeded that. In relationship to all the legislation on temporaries, we're certainly in support of all of it. And it's very true, Mr. Chairman, that especially in, it's on legislative record in the House Finance and State Affairs, where last year they came in and said retirement, as an example, is negotiable. Well, just before they came there, we were at the bargaining table, and they were saying, you got to go to the legislators. Now, that's on record, and the hearing the other day, they came and said just the opposite. So that record reflects the state in conflicting positions on what is negotiable and what isn't. In my belief, I think everything is. I don't think the Attorney General agrees, and maybe some others don't. But that's the problem we have with this administration, is that we get ping-pong between them and the legislators, and I don't think it's fair to either side, us, them, administration or this fine body of
does the Public Employees Association do agree with the testimony or do you have a problem with the testimony as given by Mr. Spray?
We would not have any objection to Mr. Spray's amendment.
Would this intensify or would this alleviate or would this change the problem as you see it, Mr. Ombudsman?
I don't see any effect at all.
Any questions by any of the other committee?
I would suggest that we adopt an amendment sub A. We'd have to work out the language so with our legal people and then go for an amendment for subsection A and then we can pass it on as far as I'm concerned.
Not now.
With the amendment.
Thank you.
We can pass it out with the amendment if
that is. Yeah, we'll compose the amendment. We'll pass it out as amended, and it'll leave the committee actually after the amendment's composed
yes,
and agreed to.
Yes, sir. I would do that and ask unanimous consent.
Those circumstances.
Out that
As amended.
The amendment, as we understand it, after it's been reviewed by the committee.
Yeah, we don't want to have to come back again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Does Barney, do you understand what the amendment is?
Ken, you can get together with
so they'll be in there.
We should sign it as amended. We understand the parameter of the amendment, but we'll have to look at it again. Is there any further testimony?
Do you want to get some testimony, Mr. Pratt?
No, I had to get up to let him sit down.
Why are you being... Yes. You can come back to order, and we'll have before us now Senate Bill 403 by Huber and Ray.
403?
Do you have a copy of that? Yes, we have copies here. It's almost an omnibus type legislation here, so we'll copy over to the witness too in case they're short.
Is there any testimony here? I think the Alaska Public Employees Association representative is here, and would you again give your name for the record and make your comments on Senate Bill number 403?
Yes, sir. I'm Sherry Shelley. I'm a lobbyist for Alaska Public Employees Association. And House Bill and Senate Bill 403 would extend to temporary employees medical leave, court leave, annual leave after they have completed 30 consecutive days of work.
Could you speak louder, honey? I do that.
Yes, sir. And basically, these leave of absence, medical leave, and annual leave basically are again precluded by statute for these employees, and therefore we cannot collectively bargain for these particular benefits, and we feel that it is justified that the temporary employees receive these benefits, and asking you to pass out this bill.
As I understand it, Mr. Chairman, is what they're doing is they're changing the 12 consecutive months that are required for temporary employees to get leaves of absence under certain conditions now, and changing that to 30 consecutive days, after 30 consecutive days of employment rather than 12 consecutive months. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Are there any questions? Does anyone here else wish to testify on that bill?
I don't have any problem with it.
No. I'll entertain a motion on it.
I would move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Bill number 403 be put out with individual recommendation, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any objection?
No objection.
Apparently, Mr. Chenoweth is out, and since we asked him to come on 405, the amendment that you can work out, administrative assistant, in conformity with Senator Ray's request, could be worked out probably immediately upon adjournment. But let us see if you can't bring Janet and Mr. Chenoweth in here for a minute right now so that we can just solve it.
Let's see if he's getting the proper place, yes. Mr. Chairman.
Those are the two amendments adopted to those two bills.
Right.
This bill is signed. There's probably some folders and so on floating around here, but I think we're on top of it, didn't I? Janet, will you sit over here at the witness stand? And Jack, would you bring a chair right up the table? Counselor, we need you to sit down if possible on a completely different subject from the one you're talking about with the Human Rights Director.
Perhaps, Mr. Chairman, you should preface your remarks so Mrs. Bradley understand the testimony while she was out of the room was given by Mr. Spray, who represents the, I forget what's the organization, but one of them.
Local 71.
Local 71. And in which he was amending or suggesting an amendment to A, that had to do with the collective bargaining, and which was acceptable to the committee. Your amendment would not be acceptable. It could not fit within the context of that. So what we're suggesting, I believe, is that the chairman's suggestion is that we get together with Mr. Chenoweth, and you tell him and the committee one more time, and then if we are in agreement again, we will direct him to draw up legislation a separate bill to take care of the problem that you have. Is that?
That's exactly right. And if you can, if your time frame allows, please stay long enough to draft up the amendment that's going to be proposed, so we can keep the APEA people and our administrative assistant all together and with yourself, so you know.
Thank you, Mr. Flavin. Thank you, Mr. Sprague.
Don't leave. Yeah. Why don't you go over that once more with Jack over here and us?
What we are looking for is a waiver from sections A and B, as you provide in section C, which would permit employees to be hired as temporaries who might not be able to qualify for the list of eligibles. What our experience has shown us is that frequently minorities, females, and other protected classes are unable to qualify for the top five positions. This is not to say that the qualifications then are invalid, but that is also something that we are investigating on many levels in state government, that sometimes the minimum qualifications for a job may or may not be predictive of success on the job. We're not looking for that question here. What we're looking for here is a mechanism whereby we can facilitate the employment of minorities and females into permanent positions. This is not an attempt to thwart the permanent employment of minorities and females, but to facilitate it.
If I could draw an analogy, Jack, the 10% Alaska contractors or Alaska business people, they're on contractual bid arrangements. That's the same kind of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And if we approach it, I think from that way, then we'll be achieving one before you've done
right.
What she wants.
I think what you're picking up on is the demonstrated need for such a mechanism in the presence of underutilization of certain classes of people.
What I think what we're trying to do is to give her the opportunity to present legislation that will give minorities at least an opportunity to be, even though they are handicapped, that some of them will be on the eligible list or can be eligible for the job. In other words, it's like the Alaskan contractor gets a 10% okay,
what we want to do.
Outside, so that's
now
that's
what we want to do
is
give emphasis to what you're saying, but make sure it doesn't take the whole thing over and become unfair the other way either.
Well, I just think that this provides one mechanism whereby affirmative action could be implemented by the use of temporaries, which would not preclude the rest of this bill. What it would do is enable the Division of Personnel to say, okay, in this particular position, we think that affirmative action would provide good grounds for a waiver. Because if this person is able to work 3 months on the job, he will then be able to qualify on the permanent register and be able to be hired into a permanent slot.
Excuse me.
Please proceed.
I'm a little bit confused in one area. We have affirmative action is the law of the land in state two.
That's correct.
Uh-huh. So that should apply in any case, shouldn't it? But what you're attempting to do is to have it up front, so to speak, to keep reminding them that, so it doesn't fall through the cracks.
One out of the top
yes,
five.
Yes, I think that's
the,
right.
One out of the top five in the register should be a waiver, maybe.
Well, that's a different question altogether. All we're suggesting is that this waiver, if it were enacted into law, would provide an opportunity for the statutory grounds to implement affirmative action in this one particular narrow instance. There are many, many mechanisms whereby affirmative action can be implemented.
Jack, could you draw up a statute, and that statute can also be submitted as an amendment to, with recommendations to the next committee if it becomes necessary?
If I might recommend to the chair that perhaps previous to submitting it to the committee that you check it out with Mrs. Bradley, and because we know you some problems back and forth, and if it's agreeable with her, and we'll look at it, and if it's not agreeable with the committee, it'll go down the tube. If it is, it'll go out. And that'll save time, probably.
If it can work out as an agreement situation, we'll put it in by the State Affairs Committee,
right.
Even with our recommendation going out with the bill, so it'll just go on the next committee.
Right.
I don't mean to suggest that we think that our statute needs amendment or implementation. This is just one way that the legislature has an opportunity to show the executive how to do the job.
I have no problem.
So you'll take it up with Jack at his convenience and yours.
I will.
Yes.
We're adjourned.
Excuse me, Mr. Petrillo. Thank you, Mr. Petrillo.
We got these.
We have a couple bills yet that
we do.
We're filing here.
Yeah.
We're filing.
Can you have a with me?
Signed out.
Do you want me to wait on the other amendment?
Yeah, let's bring Jack in here too. Could you grab Mr. Sprague if he's right here, Tom?
Sprague, he might be able to write.
Get in here so we can get this amendment straight now.
Yeah.
All for being efficient
Ken,
today.
Get Ken Sprague and he'll come in and
get in.
He'll probably write you an amendment with no problem.
It's about 10 minutes.
It has to do with contraction.
You're sitting
with the collective bargaining.
He said he's represented provided by collective bargaining.
That's the pickup at the shared revenue from that after the Alvin Maldon.
What is this? What is this?
Very quiet. We just said it.
What is this?
In federal proceedings, not state
proceedings.
Federal proceedings,
though.
Federal proceedings.
Federal proceedings. We'd have no problem.
And so you can get Slovenian into federal proceedings.
You say this is the house, and this is what
not
the
house
is
offering.
Not served. This is what the committee
is. And that one is yours, hiring state police. Or
we've got to make sure that whatever Jack drafts up there is not in conflict with what Mr. Spray from the
union.
It won't be, but William R. Ray, Bill Ray.